Hello and welcome to the first match review episode of the Palace Way podcast for the 2025-26 season. We're talking Chelsea away, a 0-0 draw, and with me today to talk about it is Bobby Manzi. Bobby, how are we doing?
If I could unmute myself, I'm very good, thank you. Enjoyed Chelsea yesterday. I thought we did all right, actually, and I'm sure we're going to get into that soon. How are you?
Good, you know, dodging a little bit of bipolar Tampa weather here. Black storm clouds coming in, pouring, and now sunshine's back out. So jacket on, not knowing if I need a jacket on. Just kind of Florida balcony life. It might rain again in 20 minutes. But to someone who had a little more fun outside celebrating a point away at Stamford Bridge, let's go down to Max. Max, you were at the match. What did you think? How did you feel? Was it happy with the point? Did you feel coming away that we could have had more with it, or something that's a point away to Big Six, never bad?
Well, first of all, like, I'm happy to be back on the pod as well. New season as well. Same faces. Very happy. In terms of the game itself, again, just happy to be back in an away end. Went down from Derby, which was... It's a little less further than my usual travels from Sheffield, but yeah, it was good. It was a good day out. I think with the match itself, we were loud as usual in the away end. I was sat right next to the Chelsea fans, which I always get some enjoyment out of. But yeah, I think it was good. I really liked the UEFA chants as well, which I feel like we are going to hear. Very, very loud on Thursday, very, very loud on Sunday. Very nice. And I will sit here and I say I do think that we was robbed. You know, we'll go into the disallowed goal a little bit more later. But I think if you take that away from it, I think a point is fair. I think defensively we looked quite solid. Kind of shut Chelsea out at times. You know, you could say that Chelsea were quite flat themselves. So it kind of played into our hands. It didn't really seem to get Palmer on the ball too much. So he didn't really seem to cause any issues. They kind of lacked the quality. And it just kind of played into our hands, allowed us to play our football, play our kind of playing through the transition, really, which helps us. But yeah, all in all, I think a draw was fair. And we mustn't forget that that's a poor result for them. And it's quite a decent result for us, I feel. You know, a clean sheet at Stamford Bridge, I think most teams in the Premier League would take that, really, with their attacking options nowadays. So yeah, I think a draw was fair, really. We didn't really seem to offer too much going forward. So apart from the free kick, I think I couldn't really see us scoring. So yeah, 0-0 I think is probably pretty fair from our point of view.
Yeah, the third consecutive match between Palace and Chelsea that a point was shared. The first two being 1-1. This one with a 0-0 nil-nil for my non-Americanness, if I will, good through there. A goal that could have been with Eberi Eze. And for the second season opener in a row, and Eze free kick is disallowed via VAR. So, Bobby, let's go to you for that one. What do you think of that call? You want to get a little more in detail with it? I think you had a post or two that kind of talked about exactly what happened with it and how rare of a call it was.
Yeah, so I actually wasn't aware of the rule before it happened. I had no clue whatsoever, but it was brought in 2019 that a player cannot be within a yard or a meter, which is quite strange that they're interchangeable anyway, but can't be within a yard or a meter of the wall. And well, if you think to the letter of the law, Mark was, and he barged Caicedo out of the way, bit shoulder to shoulder, which is, you know, if that's open play, then that's absolutely fine. But because he was within that yard of the wall, the goal was then ruled out after a VAR check just before the game was about to kick back off. Now, what I found really strange is we've never seen that rule implemented before. And we in that kind of way, and there's been numerous goals over the past 6 months that have stood when players have been within a yard of the wall. So I found it very bizarre that VAR had intervened at that point. And it's not, end of the day, rules are rule. If you're going to implement it, then fair enough, but you have to implement it consistently. And that's not something we see from the referees. All right, it's a new season, so maybe you take that into account, that maybe they're going to be strict with that. But I'm sure at countless points this season we will see that happen and it will go unpunished. So very, very bizarre decision, as far as I'm concerned. Oliver was quite perplexed by it post-match in the sense that he was like, fine, it's a rule, but it's not implemented like that. It never has been. So it's almost a bit of a dormant rule that's come back. Well, the dormant rule that was recently introduced that has bitten Palace.
That was how it really felt in the stands, because we were all, we were celebrating. We thought not only have we scored, but Eze scored as well. So it just, made it feel that little bit more special. And then all of a sudden we're seeing the referee in his earpiece, and you're thinking, how on earth is this going to get disallowed? We were all so confused. One thing I will praise though is I did like the stadium announcement. How, for
I
something
didn't
like that,
hear
we
it.
all, well, that's the thing. We did, because we were all, it very much looked like they were about to disallow it. So we all kind of, we were all quite quiet and we all listened. And he said, away number six is within a meter of the wall. Therefore, it becomes an indirect free kick. And then that was why it was disallowed. But we were, me and it, everyone that was around me in the stands were sat there thinking, we didn't, just like you said, we didn't even know that this was a rule. I'd never even heard of this before.
Well,
I don't know if it's,
I
go on.
assumed, I assumed that they had given a foul on the barge. To which point I was like, well, you can't be given a foul for that because, you can go shoulder to shoulder with someone. I don't see where the issue is there as he's approaching the ball to take his shot. I didn't quite understand that. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. It was really, really strange. And from where we were sat in the press box, obviously, once they'd realised the goal was going to be disallowed, the Chelsea fans were already celebrating anyway. So we were deafened by that. So I just sat there with no idea what had gone wrong. I tweeted about what a shocking decision it was. Then loads of people in my mentions, he's within a metre of the wall. I'm like, what are you talking about? Have I been oblivious to a rule for my entire life? So then I got onto IFAB and realised it was introduced in 2019.
Yeah, it's an interesting rule, and like you said, one that was never previously enforced. So, Palace just again getting hit with the old letter of the law. That's been the story of this summer, unfortunately. Moving to that game though, for the first half, Palace seemed to be the more attacking side. They seemed to get there wasn't many pure chances, but they had more shots on target. They had a higher level of XG. Chelsea's XG per shot, which is just in layman's terms, essentially the quality, average quality you're getting on each shot. So how likely is each shot to go in on average was 0.5, which would be 20th in every Premier League season since they've started doing that stat, extrapolated over to the next 37 matches. So Palace was playing well, and that's why I want to take it to you, Max, as someone that was there. You mentioned Chelsea looking a bit flat, and maybe they did, was for opening match, but how much of that do you think had to do with how Oliver Glasner prepared his squad to look out of possession and be a bother to them?
Well, I think it's no secret. We all know that we quite often look very calm under pressure when we play against teams that are more possession based and more possession dominant. Your teams like your Liverpool, like your Man City, who enjoy the ball and they can kind of play their football, and we kind of just sit back and do our job. But I think Glasner has drilled his ideology and his way of playing football into the players, and it becomes even more obvious now. Now he's got this, I say this 11, that might not be that 11 for much longer, but the 11 that he's got, I think he's drilled in so well, and everyone seems to know their jobs. And I said previously that Chelsea looked flat, and yes, they did look flat, but whenever they did kind of start to go on to the attack, or starting to look like they were on the break, or there was a promising move, we just seemed to shut them out, and it didn't really seem like we were ever under pressure. And I think that's, just kind of said, Pat. I think a lot of it is Glasner and the way that he manages the team, and how well drilled the players are into defending against those kind of setups.
Yeah, and I think he's starting to get a reputation amongst other clubs in the Premier League, and people are starting to prepare for Crystal Palace now, which is something that, even a season or two ago, you would never think that we could truthfully say. But Chelsea with Maresca, they normally play in this back four that converts into a back three. We've seen that before, but it's usually Cucurella having free rein on that left side and really in that classic possession play or positional play, 3-2-5 shape, where they're susceptible through the middle. If you break through and you have that transitional moment in that middle two, you really have to hope that the defenders are in good position or you can get beat on the counter. And that's exactly where Crystal Palace under Oliver Glasner have been so lethal and so deadly, is in those transitional moments. So what Maresca did yesterday was he kept another player back. Instead of being a 3-2-5, it was really a 3-1-2-4. So instead of going up and overlapping most of the first half, especially, Cucurella was playing inverted almost as a left-sided eight, where Enzo is a right-sided eight, and you had Caicedo right in front of that back three. So he kept another person in midfield, and I think that took away a lot of our chances on the counter, which we didn't have many, but it also made them just completely complacent with in possession and really falling into our hands, because just watching our rotations, there was never really a time where we were at much of vulnerability. We were rotating well, and I think that was because Maresca legitimately prepared for how Palace hit on the attack, and that's something to really be proud of, I think. We're winning trophies, we're winning community shields, and now top sides are planning for us instead of just saying we'll take their game to them. So I think that explains a lot of the first half, but I also think it's a feather in the cap of Oliver Glasner, whatever the season goes with. And it shows how good our 11 is. But in the second half, I think what showed was how once that 11, maybe two or three players off the bench can compete with that. But after that, there's a significant drop off of what's needed. And with a side like Chelsea that has all the depth, you saw the second half kind of have a different story. So, Bobby, I'll throw it to you on that one. Where do you think? Do you think the tactics changed much, or do you think it was quite simply the players were getting more fatigued while Chelsea had quality depth to bring in with fresh?
Yeah, no, I think Chelsea's substitutions really changed the game. Estevao and Liam Delap in that last 15 minutes, I thought really brought Chelsea to life, because in the first half, I felt like Palace were absolutely exceptional, were by far the better side, beside that one chance Chelsea had in the 3rd minute that was off the line by Ismaïla Sarr. I thought they took the game to Chelsea well. I thought they looked a cohesive defensive unit, and not compromising on attacking pizzazz. I thought they were superb going forward. A couple of wrong decisions in front of goal, and maybe make the right decisions there, and you go into half time with a couple of goal lead. And then the second half, I thought that first half an hour was a bit of a stalemate, actually. Chelsea, I think you quite rightly point out, managed to neutralise Palace's threat. And as I already mentioned, it was that 15-minute spell at the end where Estevao came on and was really tricky down the right-hand side, the Palace left. To which point he obviously withdrew Eberieze for Justin Deveni, which for a couple of reasons Palace needed some more legs there. And equally, I think it was a bit of a defensive substitution to try and cope with that threat coming down that side. But on the whole, I thought it was a very, very impressive Crystal Palace performance. And if you look at their last 10 games as such, where they won two trophies in there while beating or drawing with the established top six and Aston Villa, it just shows you how much quality there is in that starting 11. And if you can build a squad there, if you can get that squad a little bit deeper, the sky is the limit for this Palace side this season, because there is enough quality within that 11 to be competing in the top six, going deep in the Conference League and trying for cup runs.
Yeah,
I
there's
think that's exactly it though, isn't it, Bobby? We've got the quality in that 11, and I think when we were talking about the second half, and Chelsea can bring on those two players, they can bring on Estevao and they can bring on Delap, who I don't really think Gittins had a great game, but Estevao came on and he was very direct. Delap was kind of doing things that Delap does. Yet I think it was screamingly obvious that Glasner doesn't really trust to anybody on the bench to come on and fill in a role to go and score that winner. I've always spoke about Lerma and Deveni being runners, and they, that's something that you need towards the back end of a game, especially when it's nil nil. And we knew that with the substitutions that they'd made, we were going to, you know, we were going to push on. Sorry, they were going to push on, and we were kind of going to hold off. And you know, if we got that lucky counter attack, we got the lucky counter attack, but we didn't. I just think that fatigue became so obvious. I thought JP was absolutely blowing at the end. There was one of the corners that we got quite late on, and he was right below me, and you could really see he. It probably was a time where Nketiah might have come on for the past kind of last kind of 10 minutes. I don't know. It just. We just looked very, very tired towards the end, but I'm not going to knock them because, you know, we still held on.
Yeah, the one thing that I would say is when you're making the squad depth comparison is that you have to be careful when it's Chelsea because of
100%.
the amount of resources and financial firepower they have at their disposal. Obviously, it's no secret they've made 51 signings or 50 signings, whatever it is, over the last, well, since Clearlake have come in, and they've spent well over £1 billion now. So to say that Palace haven't got squad depth that, you know, can change games when Chelsea can is a bit off the mark as such because of how much money they've spent. But
No, of course, of
I do
course.
think there is a good point to be made there in the fact that Oliver Glasner does not trust Dzeko Mraczacki, Odson Edouard, Roman Essay to an extent. You've got Eddie Nketiah and Mateus Franchler out injured. And you've got no Daichi Kamada in the squad because he's injured. And then you look on the bench and it's just very bare. You've got Nathaniel Clyne and Jefferson Lerma, who are your trusted stalwarts, if you like. But that aside, and obviously Borna Sosa is a new addition at left back, but there was no real need to make that substitution because it's number one an attacking sub, and number two, I thought Tyreek was having a really good game. But it does feel like the squad is down to the bare bones and they need some attacking flair to add, especially if you're going to lose someone like Eberechi Eze, this summer to Tottenham Hotspur, which looks like it is possible. You need to reinvest that money very cleverly and look to be adding three players across the forward line to be able to compete in Europe. Because at the moment, Palace look like they've got gaps in attack. They need another centre midfielder, and so long as Chaddy Riyad is out injured, they're two centre backs short as well. Right wing back. My understanding was that Caleb Cipora was viewed as the deputy to Daniel Munoz, and I think with the injury, among some other things, that has potentially changed, and they p could possibly need to add a right wing back in there as well. So they've left themselves a lot to do in the final weeks of the transfer window. And I just think that Chelsea game is, as you rightfully point out, I know we've taken a while to get to that point, but is a good example of where you need those extra players to bring on when it gets a bit leggy and when players have been running non-stop for 75 minutes. You can make those changes. Five subs in the Premier League now. We've had that for a few years. You need to be able to maximise that. And Palace, with the option they had on the bench, Oliver Glasner was forced to put Dzeko Mraczacki, who probably hasn't got a future at the football club, on the bench. So I think that tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point there too in terms of the substitution that was made. Was it a little too defensive? Nearly a quarter, so 24% of all the XG Chelsea generated for the entire match came in the 8 minute span from the 88th minute plus the 6 minutes of stoppage time. So a quarter of their entire quality chances generated came in the final 8 minutes of the match. And yeah, we talk about fatigue and all that. That's great, but it could also be a situation where you take off some attackers and you try to drop a little deeper and just see it out, and that substitution becomes negative by design, and you're just holding on for dear life, trying to withstand chances being created against you. So it could be something where we got negative, too negative when we shouldn't have. But again, this is kind of like a dog chasing its own tail, because you could come back to, well, he had to get negative because he didn't have the quality of depth, or at least the quality of depth that he thinks is good enough. So it's kind of two sides of the same coin, but definitely an interesting way to look at it when you look at how the chances broke down. Standout performances. I'll give mine first, then I'll let you guys talk. For me, it was Munoz. That shouldn't be a surprise. I think a lot of people would say that watching the match. Covered the most ground, had the most sprints by far out of anybody that played, spent the most percentage of his time running or sprinting out of any other player. None of these things should surprise you. It's Daniel Munoz. He doesn't stop moving. There was a time where I think Mateta had a chance where he knocked the ball down, and I was thinking to myself, oh, this would be a good chance for Munoz to run onto the ball. And just right into the picture on the TV screen, Munoz just appeared and took it off JPM's legs, like hilariously so. Just always everywhere that you need him to be. Unfortunately, couldn't convert, but he played great as a two-way defender, attacking wing back. Max, who's yours?
Probably Adam Wharton. I think I've said defensively that we were very strong. I do think there was glimpses of Wharton being magic, kind of strutting his stuff, picking that ball up on the turn. He picks the pass, he follows on. He picks a pass, he follows on, and it's almost like he knows every time the right ball to play. And I feel like I mentioned it on the pod before. It's one thing being able to recognize where the ball should go, or assessing your passing options and being able to recognize where it should go. But it's another thing to be able to actually have the technique and the ability to be able to make that ball. And he just seems to do it every time. I think D did get a little bit tired towards the end, but like I said, I think they all did really. But yeah, I just think it was a game where Wharton, against any central midfielders that I've seen, he never looks out of his depth really. And it just yeah, he was just allowed to do what he does best really.
Yeah, I thought Tyrick Mitchell had a very good game, as I mentioned already. I think he probably made the most tackles of anyone in the game. I also thought Max Lacroix was extremely dominant at centre back as well. So I thought defensively, certainly in that first half, that Palace were just so solid. So I would probably lean to one of those. Eze in the first half was top class. I mean, it was one of his just star-studded performances. I found in the second half that potentially he was trying a little bit too hard, and maybe where he's had the speculation over his future leading up to the game, that he just wanted to prove how into it he was and dedicated to the cause and trying to just, show the Palace fans, whether it was his last performance in the Palace shirt or not, that he's still giving his all. But it was just a few times where he looked like he went for the glory moment, when he could shoot from deep and he had options either side of him. It happened on a couple of occasions. I mean, there was one 3-on-2 Palace were, and I think he shot from about 40 yards out with Sanchez slightly off his line after failing three times already to do that, when he just had to play in either side. So he was almost looking for that perfect moment to get that celebration again, that he'd missed out on the free kick. But I thought in the first half he was unplayable. So yeah, those were my three. Eze, not so much in the second, as say, disappointed with selfishness. And throughout the game, Maxence Lacroix and Tyrick Mitchell.
So we're going to jump straight into the Eze situation at the end. I think him getting subbed off was allowing him to have his moment. I know people, there's been a lot of talk about it. Bobby thinks not. I personally think it was. And then I was watching him. I'll let Bobby say his piece while he's shaking his head. I think I was watching him. So after the full time whistle, my eyes were just glued to Eze the whole time, and I wanted to see what he was going to do. Very interesting. He spoke to Cole Palmer for quite a while on the other side of the pitch while the rest of the team came over and Glasner came over. Then once re the rest of the team started to make their way into the tunnel, he came in on his own. And we've all seen, we've seen the video, and we've all seen what he was like. I personally think it was a like an appreciation, thank you, the hand on the heart type thing. That's how I read it, and I imagine that's how a lot of Palace fans read it. But Bobby, please prove me wrong.
I think it's been, look, I buy the logic of him going over to the fans at the end and having that moment. He was there for quite a while. Maxence Lacroix and Daniel Munoz were also in the vicinity, but they hung back to let Eze have his moment before thanking the fans himself. So I do feel, and I tweeted at the time, he did feel a moment. Whether it is his final moment is another matter. ultimately, Oliver Glasner does not make sentimental substitutions unless there is nothing riding on the game. Look, the first day of the Premier League season, when Palace are starting a new campaign where they will be playing for every point, you're not going to bring off your star player to clap the fans or get his moment. It's crazy talk. The substitution I put to Oliver after the game, because I wondered whether it was Eze had that selfishness had increased a little as the game was going on. So I wondered if he was thinking more for the team that he needed to make a substitution to just protect the game and get back to playing for the team, because Oliver's obviously very big on that. It's a message he's spoken about a lot. But Oliver explained when I put that to him that it was simply we were running out of energy as such, and he needed to inject some more legs into the team. And Justin is a player who covers a hell of a lot of ground, so it was kind of the substitution that makes sense. And I totally buy that from Oliver. I think it was a very fair explanation. But no, I don't buy that Oliver was trying to give Eze his moment. He can have that after the final whistle.
This is such a politician answer, but so do I think that Oliver Glasner subbed him out for that moment? No, absolutely not. He was the same person that subbed out Essay at Anfield when it was a really close game. And just to prove a point, there's no way that he did that. But that being said, do I think that as he got subbed out, as I was looking around thinking this might be it for me, so I'm gonna make this moment into my moment. Yeah, I think that's what was happening. I don't think Glasner did it to give him his moment, but I think Eze kind of took it as a moment of, we don't know what's gonna happen. This might be the last one for me. If it is, I'm gonna enjoy it. I'm gonna accept it and embrace it. So I know I just basically agreed with both of you, but you're
No,
welcome.
I feel like I've worded it completely wrong. I don't necessarily think that Glasner subbed as a to give him his moment. I don't think that. I don't think Glasner made the sub to give him his moment. I think he made the substitution, and Eze, like you just said, Pat, I think Eze took
Yeah.
that as his moment to kind of show appreciation and things like that. I do agree. I don't think Glasner is a type of manager, especially 0-0, Stamford Bridge, 5 minutes to go, first game of the season. I don't think he's a man to give him off, to give him his little sentimental moment. I don't think that was the sole reason. I just think while he did have his walk over to the manager, if just from the stands, it kind of felt like a this is a goodbye. And then, like you say, yeah, he had it again at the end of the game. Yeah, I want to clear that up because I feel like I worded it to give that impression.
I mean, it may not even be goodbye. I thoroughly believe that no matter what happens with Ebrea Chiesa's future, they will try and hang on to him until Friday at least, so he can play the Frederikstad game and play for Crystal Palace in Europe after, joining of them in the middle of the Premier League. And there's quite a nice story to it there. But ultimately, in a Conference League playoff, you need your best players, regardless of the opposition. So I do think there is a want there to certainly have him for that game. I wouldn't say. I don't know if it was a farewell from Eze or whether it was a thank you because he's had a tough week and lots of talk about his future and the fans still there supporting his every move. Palace's FA Cup winning hero, someone who's always going to be loved at Palace regardless of what happens in the next 2 weeks. So I'm not certain if that moment was his farewell or whether it was just a, thanks for this week, guys. And if it is farewell, then thank you for everything. But yeah, look, let's see what happens. There's 2 weeks left to go in the window. I don't foresee negotiations being easy between Steve Parish and Daniel Levy. They're probably the most nightmarish negotiators you could have in a room together in football. However, it's no secret that Crystal Palace need to sell somebody this summer, whether that be Mark Gay or Ebrea Chiesa. They've sacrificed a lot of money on Mark Gay, not selling him this summer and now potentially losing him on a free. They can't really be in the same position with Eze again next season where they are with Mark now. So they need resolutions for these situations, whether they're new contracts for certain players, sales, or sacrificing Mark on a free transfer next summer. Selling Eze this summer, there just has to be a resolution there somewhere. Otherwise, business-wise, Crystal Palace look like an absolutely crazy entity, especially if they're not, the cash flow isn't the greatest at the moment as it could be. So yeah, we need some resolutions, and my guess would be, or my opinion would be, if you like, is that Eberechi Eze will leave Crystal Palace come the end of the transfer window, and Mark Gay will still be a Crystal Palace player.
Yeah, and whatever does happen with Aberyeze, I think he'll always be held in high regard at Crystal Palace for all the accomplishments, for being the match winner, the lone goal scorer in our FA Cup winning trophy. So if he does leave, I think it will be with our support, maybe not our happiness, but with support nonetheless. And that leads us to the first opening night of Selhurst Park is also the first European night on Thursday, when Palace look to begin their journey into the UEFA Conference League phase.
The
Max, you
tournament name's not a change. Tournament name change hasn't helped, has it? Because it was Europa Conference League, and now it's just the Conference League.
it's a lot. It's a
Yeah.
mouthful, let's put it that way. But Max, thanks for joining us tonight. I'm really happy that you could come out and talk Palace with us. Will you be at Selhurst Park's European night?
Unfortunately, I won't. I'm absolutely devastated that I can't make it. Well, no, I won't be there on Thursday. I'm determined to make it to as many European nights as I can. I want to do an away day at some point this season because, look, we don't know. We don't, I'd say we are favourites to win, but, that's a long way away right now. We don't know the next European season we'll get. So I have made a promise to myself that I want to go to. I want to try and get to Selhurst for a couple of European nights. I definitely want to try and do an away day as well. But yeah, I won't be there. But look, amongst everything that's going on, we just have to be excited that we're not in the right European competition, but we're in a European competition for the first time. And we have to approach it that way. We go out, we show UEFA, we go and win it. We absolutely destroy Fredrikstad, or however you pronounce it. Bobby did a good job earlier. We need to go and absolutely destroy them on Thursday, and we need to go and mark our territory and say, right, if this is the teams that we're going to be playing against, we need to absolutely tear them apart. With all due respect to them, it's not a personal thing. It's just we're Crystal Palace, and we need to show that we belonged in the Europa League. And it's exciting times, isn't it? That's how we need to look at it. We need to keep positive, and it's done now. We're playing Conference League, so let's go and win it.
Well,
Yeah, there's a.
let's get through the qualifier first before we predict, laying markers down and
I know
picking teams
this
and
is
going on to win the competition. I think it would be the
it's your
most
trademark, Bobby,
I think it would
this.
be the most Crystal Palace thing ever to go out in a playoff game against a team I hadn't heard of 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So let's just get through the playoff first of all. Look, I think Palace should win convincingly across the two legs. However, Fredrikstad are halfway through the season and Palace are just starting theirs, albeit they have started it with great performances against Premier League champions Liverpool and world champions Chelsea. So man for man, obviously, even I think Fredrikstad's record signing is less than £1 million. So, if you think about that in comparison to some of the business Palace have done over the last couple of years, and the value of the Palace squad and the potentially the value Palace could be getting for some sales over the next 12 months, then it's not even comparable, is it? Or comparable. But look, it's going to be a great night at Selhurst Park. I will be there for a first ever European game in at Selhurst Park. It just feels, as Max rightfully pointed out, Palace not in the right competition, but it's time to just seize that opportunity now and enjoy this journey, however long that may last, whether it finishes in Leipzig or, Palace don't get out of the league phase or even reach the league phase. It's European football. It's something Palace fans have dreamt of for a long time, and it's finally going to happen now. And look, let's expect the UEFA delegate to have a tough night, sat in the comforts of the director's box with probably some chants and some banners and a couple of protests that you won't like the sight of.
Yeah, and I don't get FOMO. I don't get fear of missing out much. I've kind of accepted it, being on the other side of the ocean. But this is one that I'm pretty jealous of. So whoever does get a chance to be there, whoever does get a chance to get to some of these European ties, if they happen after the ties here, I'm pretty jealous of. And I hope you understand how important it would be and how massive a moment it is for this entire club, for people who have family that have supported this club for, two, three, four generations, mind you, to never have been in a moment like this. I think it's pretty amazing that we just happen to be on this earth at the time that it's all happening for Crystal Palace, and we all just happen to be supporters of the club at the time it's all happening. But with those in mind that never had a chance to, I think it's just as much for them as it is for us. So I'm certainly cognizant of that sitting here in Florida and watching, talking to some of you guys, but it's a very special moment. Very special moment for sure. And for that, I think we'll sign off. Bobby, thank you so much for squeezing me in, man. I know these next 2 weeks are going to be just nonstop, nonstop, nonstop. So you getting a little 45 minutes in with us, we really appreciate you.
I just hope I manage to get some sleep tonight. It's been a very, very busy day. It's never a dull, never, never a dull day in the world of Crystal Palace Football Club. But yeah, enjoy coming back on. I think at some point this week we're going to do another podcast previewing Fredrikstad, all being well time wise. So I look forward to coming back for that.
Yeah, we can bring Max back on and talk, and just maybe this is the lucky trio. We just keep winning. We'll be the Conference League trio. Who knows?
Bruno
But
won't like that. You've already
I
stolen
was
this
going to say,
podcast,
Bruno's not going
according
to be a
to some people
fan
in the comment section. And
of
now you're making those comments.
that. Hey, I already thanked him for coming on his own podcast. I'm on to the next
Yeah,
episode. I might just end up being a guest for the rest of the season for if I keep this up. Who knows? But that being said, let me butter him up by plugging the new merch that we have at the Palace Way. If you go to our social page, follow the link, you're gonna see some stuff that you might like. Go give it a check, see what you enjoy from here on out, and go check our social pages. Keep giving us follows, keep giving us interest to talk about topics, tasks, questions for the pod, you name it. Keep reviewing us well. Until next time, friends, the Palace.